Hello, I'm on the air. This is Kathy Cook. We'll be bridging wisdom. And I'm
It's 8
also,
o'clock.
my computer says it's 8 o'clock. And tonight is October the 9th, 2012. I'm also known as Bright Lights Pathfinders all over the world. If you ever want to search out Bright Lights Pathfinders, that's with S's. You can place in any word after that, and you can come up with a lot of good stuff that I've written over the years. I haven't put anything out on the internet in a pretty long time, but still, it's out there. I am just coming out of meditation, which I do several times a day. So I'm very elated and very calm and relaxed and nearly not touching the ground. So bear with me while get to what I wanted to talk about tonight. I wanted to talk a little bit about mercy and grace. I wanted to talk a little bit about why people tend to feel that, it even says in the Bible about fearing God. I want to talk about the gifts that we have. So there's a lot in store that I've been studying today that, go along with the gifts that God gives us. First of all, I'd like to just start with a little bit of quietness and calm in our hearts, minds, spirits, souls. And just let yourself relax and just be in that place where it doesn't matter what anybody thinks of you or feels of you or anything but yourself and your higher self. And allow yourself to just be and just relax and just go out there. And I do want to state that anytime we do go out there, in any kind of disassociation or travel, to make sure you keep that umbilical cord connected to you and God, to you and the earth, because without that, we could get lost in pieces and particles of ourselves. And astral traveling could be left behind if not having that umbilical cord, that lifeline hooked us. And that's what causes split souls and split. That's where my job comes into play with split soul retrieval in shamanism. So as you do your breathing and you let go, make sure you always have that lifeline, just like an astronaut. I want to thank God for the peace and tranquility that has blanketed over me and for healing my auras and my chakras and my heart. My heart, I listen with my heart, but my heart is not the chamber inside of my body. My heart is the core center of my soul, and it feeds my spirit. And my heart has been really aching and split lately. That's because I have learned when I went to the beach this past weekend, which I haven't been to in a very long time since my father passed away. It was 2005, and I had worked every being of myself to even get there. I didn't know why I had kept myself from the place that I'd gone to every summer all my life, just about. But when I got there used to be like a bridge or a bar island that separated Ocean Isle, North Carolina, from Sunset Beach. And there used to be this huge mailbox right in the middle. It's like a little island. We could wade to it when the tide was out. And it disappeared in the late 80s as the pole shifted in the earth. And first thing I noticed when I got there, because our house is adjacent in between the ocean and the inlet, which is the waterway where the boats come in and out. And that island's back, just like it was, exactly the same shape and everything. So if I hadn't stopped going, intently, not knowing why, because I rest in what I'm told through my spirit, I might not have noticed it coming up, and it would have just been there and I'd gone on about it. But that place is where, back in the 80s and the 90s, several times I would stand where the ocean and inlet meet, where the tide is kind of crossing each other, and I'd hold my hands straight up in the air and bury some stones or some gifts into the sand and feel my feet shifting with the waves coming in and out because it'd be right at the edge. And I would just tell God to speak for me, do for me, act for me, be for me in every way, shape, and form. Allow me to have all the people, places, and things into my life that are of the good and of the will of the calling that I have been brought forth upon, and remove all people, places, and things that are not of my path and my calling and that are not good and right for me. And I ask him to show me everything in my life because I felt I had been pretty good. And you can listen to some archives on that one because so many things have transpired since then, but this was my calling. This was who I am. And I want to start with mercy, because mercy is the ability to be able to give compassion. And with compassion, it's a caring. Here's the traits. It's on a www.spritegivin.com. GIVINGIFTS.com. That's spirit given gifts.com. And I'm on mercy. And it says that the personality traits or the personal traits are caring, responsive, kind, gentle, tender, sensitive, compassionate, patient, and persistent. Now, what I have learned while I look this up is where I have talked several times on broadcast about the rich man's gate and his brother, and how Abraham had had the poor man, which was the rich man's brother, that would beg for food and things at the rich man's gate, and their death, and how his brother, the rich man, went to hell. He was very thirsty. He was begging for water. And in the bosom of Abraham was the poor spiritual guy, brother. And he begged for his brother to get some water, and that he knew that his brother was sorry for the way he had treated him. And the angel of grace came and said, "Well, if your brother is truly merciful with his asking forgiveness and understanding what he has done, then we will grant him some water." And his brother, that was parched and so thirsty, begged and pleaded forgiveness and asked, "Please give me some water." And the angel of grace realized that he had not prayed with mercy, compassion for his brother that he had treated so wrongly on earth, and treated with, judgment and harshness and ridicule and names and, undermining and secretive whispers and things. So that's a lesson that I have really and truly wanted to live by, is mercy. I want mercy in my life. I want to have compassion, and I care so deeply for people, places, and things. And I want to say that at the beach, I did not go out on the ocean where I had stood so many times on the sand and asked God to show me and take me. I stayed on the inlet side, even though it was just through the house and on the other side of a deck. But I kept my face on the inlet and watched the lighthouses and the lights and things and the birds. And it's amazing how deep that inlet was for the last time I was there. And now it's just the sand until the water comes up. So we are shifting back on our poles because it's going back to exactly how it was when I was a kid and back in the early 80s. And that's the East Coast. I also want to clarify, I have Southern in me. I am near the South. I am near Southern, but I am Southeast. I'm not a Southern. I'm a Southeast. But I talk in the southern drawl because North Carolina is right there at the edge. We need to be more sensitive towards others, and we need to be more compassionate and not be so judgmental and so quick to judge. And, I have had a lot of lessons in my life that, when things bother me, it's something inside myself that I need to look at. For my heart to be ripping so raw and whole for months now and almost unbearable for another person and other things, in the depths of the love and care I have for things and people and this certain man in my life. I prayed to God the other day. I said, please take this pain. I can't take it anymore. Please help me to understand. And God simply said to me, that is just one heart that you care for, that you are feeling. One, like a speck of sand. There's so many creatures on the face of this earth. You can now imagine how I feel in my heart, God's heart, of the love and compassion and the mercy and grace that he has upon us all, everything that's ever been made on this earth. I was like, whoa, I don't know how you bear it. Because I was about to die. And then I talked to my friend, Master Butterfly. And again, simple few words, follow my heart, get my mind out of the way, which is what I've always said, but sometimes I forget and I lose it in there. And I just am so grateful for each person that's in my life, each place and each thing that is in my life that show me such simplicity and such gentleness and understanding. I do want to thank all of the teachers out there that spar on and spar me and get me to thinking. And I do want to say that my mother gave me this book. My godmother, Woot Woot, my children gave me a book called Prayer Jabez, which I've read several times. And my mother gave me one. Then I handed mine over to Michael and I asked Mady to bring me one. And along with it, my mother gave me Beyond Jabez. Well, that's expanding your borders. Well, I opened up to page 84, and it's by Bruce Wilkinson with Brian Smith. And it says, in my experience, God rarely makes our fear disappear. Instead, he asks us to be strong and take courage. What is courage? Not the absence of fear. Rather, it's choosing to act in spite of the fear. You could say that without fear, we could not have genuine courage. I wanted to share that because that was a deep lesson for me. Because I knew that when I got here and I could understand and comprehend what was going on as a human being, that my path was to conquer fear. That's what I thought is good. And I always knew that I needed courage in order to do that. But I also know that I don't have put on me more than I can handle. It's just like the weightlifter that, you know, or the bodybuilder that does not put on extraneous weights or does too much activity for their body because it could harm it unless they have nurtured and really worked towards gently building up to those weights and that heaviness and that lifting and that pushing of the body, because we have got to know the repetitions. We have got to know how many. We got to know how to rest in between and get used to that and push one or two past the burn when we're working out with weights. But then we go on, right? And also, you know, I will learn over and over, keep having those lessons because we're in the lesson of life. I call this the universe of the university of life. But each one of us have lessons that come across to us. Each thing speaks to us. It's just like I was raised with horses. I learned to watch the horse's ears in order to know its temperament, mood, and what it was feeling, thinking, or doing. Because if the ears fall flat back on the horse, then boy, better watch out because it ain't happy. If, you know, the ears are, you know, just like little sections, they go up and up and up. If they're face straight up, they're listening straight ahead. You'll see one horse's ear move back and forth as it listens to the rider. I think of people as horses and other people that are in their lives as the rider, because no one can ride a horse the same way. And it depends on a bit that's in a horse's mouth. If you have a bit that is so strong on a horse, it can make its neck bow down to the ground and arch up. But I do not know for the life of me why I'm talking about this, but I guess it's because I was talking about it with my friend the other day on the phone, Master Butterfly. But, you know, I was raised in training a lot of horses and breaking them. And to use the reins in a certain bit, you know, first you use the lunge rope. You never put one around its neck. You use a halter and a lunge underneath its neck, under the halter. And you lunge it and teach it what the rope's about. It doesn't just happen. And that will cause a lot of fear in a horse. But the thing is that when a horse, you first get on it, it'll start bucking and rearing and trying to do all that. If you take your reins, especially using a double or triple rein in your hands and put jerk straight up but towards yourself and close to the horse's neck and pull down at the same time on the other rein and pull back towards your waist, that horse will lay down. Once that happens, you can pretty much ride that horse and know what it's doing and feeling, because I'm telling you, I'm like a horse. I'm not like a cat. I don't resonate with cats. I don't resonate with any of them. I did see a black panther one time in one of my dreams, but that was a lesson to know that all animals are to be respected in their space and boundaries, and whatever. You have to look up the black panthers and the cougars and what they mean to you. But resonate with what animal is with you at this time. I'm saying that I'm like a horse, because in my days, I had a horse named Fairlady. No one could get on but me. But I was told, my dad was told, by Uncle Lester, Aunt Lisa and Uncle Lester, which was my mom and dad's best friend. We called Aunt and Uncle, Sil and Peggy and Ben's mother and father. He got me a horse. I was 8 years old. She was half a hand too short to be the five-gated show horse, because they go by hands and, which are the height. He says, your daughter's a green rider, which means not seasoned. She's got to be more sage in order to ride this horse. And I said, being 8 years old, that horse, I was going to ride it. I jumped on it, no bridle, saddle, nothing. Had a little halter on it. Took off running, enjoyed her. And anybody and everybody that got on that horse's back after that, she would just turn to the left, to the right, really sharp, rub them off on trees. She's a one-man horse because of, many different things that transpired through that. But I just want to let you know that each person, if you think about each person in your life as a horse and you're a rider, how are you going to treat that horse? Are they going to be pleasure or what? That's just a heads up for that. I'm not prepared for anything. I never do. I have had many archives run in the past, and I want to thank my mother and everybody for the support that they have been giving me. I want to thank White Eagle for last week's broadcast, which I barely could speak, but tonight I am more in a tranquil state of mind. I have been keeping my mind quiet, which is meditation, to keep the thoughts at bay, which I used to say, light, Jesus is the light, just one word mantra. And if a thought would come in, I would acknowledge that thought, because that's all the thought wants, comes from the subconscious mind. And once I acknowledged it and said I'd write about it or think about that thought in a few minutes, then it would go away. Well, tonight, today's meditations and yesterday's is God gave us his son, which in return died and spilt his blood for us in his third day of resurrection. He gave us the Comforter, which is the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost. Before then, there was no resurrections. And that's just my beliefs. I believe in the Bible. I believe in what I'm taught because I've been raised in church. I've been raised many different ways, but that stuck with me because when my grandfather died and we weren't to touch, right? Michael said you're not to touch the Holy, when Jesus was risen and gave the Comforter as our gift, because the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, can speak for me in the depths of my prayers and in my understanding when I can't find words for myself. And I'm saying this because today all I could say in my meditation was, Holy Spirit, my comforter, take me, give me comfort. And it's amazing how that feeling left me and just calmed me right down. I found this printout that my mother gave me back in the 70s or 80s, goodness, I don't even know when. But it's on the spiritual gifts and the characteristics. And I was going to read a few of them. We have discernment, which is number 5. Discernment, many people put out there to use discernment of the spirits, because Satan is the light, the brightest light, right? People say go to the light or gives light. They don't realize Satan is the brightest light. You have to ask the spirit if it is of Christ light, if it is of the good light. What light is it when you bring on the light? But with discernment, it is a divine enablement to distinguish between truth and error. To discern the spirits is differentiating between good and evil. Hey, yay. See, I haven't read this in a long time, so bear with me. But I did speak what I felt of discernment. Right and wrong. People with this gift distinguish truth from error, right from wrong, pure motives from impure, identify deceptions in order in others with accuracy and appropriateness. They determine whether a word attributed to God is authentic, recognized, or inconsistent in its teachings. Prophetic messages and interpretation are able to sense the presence of evil. Now, I want to go back to what we were born with. We were born with instinct and intuition. Everybody's got that. I was thinking earlier tonight in my meditations, before I lay down to have my meditations, to be quiet and listen. I placed out there, because whatever you place out in your heart, mind, spirit, or soul before you go to sleep or meditate, when you come out of it, it's going to be your answer every single time. Now, I was thinking of intuition and instinct, and what I gathered was the instinct is like my radar. The instinct is what shows me where things or whatever are. That's my instinct. Like most animals use their instinct to find their food and their shelter or whatever. But instinctively knowing, like a kid, for some reason it's been a lot on these news papers and these things on the internet about kids getting run over in the car. You know, and I want to say with this that with instinct, we know not to go in that street. Our child, we teach them before what is good and bad for them, what is right and wrong. And with intuition, the intuition tells us if it resonates so. The other night, my daughter called me and she said that my granddaughter had gotten out of her crib for the first time and was heading down the stairs during her nap time. And my daughter said, thank goodness I had been teaching and working with her to come down the steps on her belly. See? That is to teach, not to go in the street. Teach how to get down. That is intuitive instinct. My daughter had the instinct to know that it was time nearly for my granddaughter to learn to go down the stairs. So instinctively with her, she felt that, but intuitively she knew how to teach my granddaughter to come down the steps on her stomach. That's an example that I want to give out there. Now, another thing that I want to say about the gifts, because there's so many of them. Let me see how many of this is on this paper. I don't know if I'm going to touch on all of them or not, but there's 23. The 23rd one is wisdom. Wisdom. Just like this is bridging wisdom, because to me, everybody has wisdom. And everybody has a message to get out there if it's truthful and in alignment and they give the understanding of how they gained it, because that's the bridge. And the bridge to wherever your wisdom, where you're going, we can all be on the same one or we can be on different ones at each time, but that's why I call it bridging wisdom. I heard an archive the other day from somewhere, some radio station, of this person that they had this accent there. I hear them all over the place, but you know, the number seven, and I say the seven wonders of the world. Well, that's the wonders of like the Leaning Tower or Old Faithful that's in the Yellowstone Park. Those are the mysteries. But this person said that the mystery was, I mean, you know, the seven wonders, which, I mean, there's seven of them in the world, but this person said that it was the earth, the sun, and the moon. And then three planets that follow it. Like, oh my gosh. That's why we have to use discernment in messages that we hear and listen to, whether it's TV, people, places, things, internet, radio, whatever. Because so many people are searching for the right way. But so many people, everybody that speaks out is listening to what they have to say for themselves in a teaching. But we have to be careful to say words in the right communications that I feel this and I feel that and I need this or that. But our needs are always there if we just be, because to me, my old dictionary back in the early 70s and 80s, it says what the definition of BE is God. And the definition of passion uses the example of Jesus dying on the cross. Well, also the color red is passion. I'm very passionate because the depth of my love could be the depth of my hurt and anger at the other side. It's good to have healthy anger, to speak out and to fuss and to get it out, because if we don't, it'll turn into rage. Now, what I've learned with listening with my heart, when my heart felt so sad, is that I was being in a silent place, not at any communication with some people or a person. And my heart was aching because of not understanding and not having this closure or whatever it needed. But once I realized that when I'm comfortable in my silence with this person or anybody, then and only then can I be content with what is to be and to allow God to do what he needs, just like with the toy, you give it away to God to let him fix it. And we're so adamant to pull it back, our pains, our sufferings, or whatever, because we want that feeling starts coming back. Well, that feeling starts coming back because we have not meditated on it to let it go. I do not give out many gifts or cards or anything because unless it's something from my home, because I feel that when I give something, which is the messages I give out here on the internet and my teachings and the things that I say and speak, is because that deep and meant hard depth for me. I understand that there's something that I need to give to somebody, but I'm not one to take it back. They can leave it here, they can give it back, but to give something that deep is allowing, just like giving it to God in prayer, giving anything, whether it's, having faith and allowing God to do his work through. But if I keep trying to pull it back, like I have been with my heart, then he can't fix it. It can't be what it needs to be, whether it's a lesson or I've been so many times in people's lives right when they lose somebody, like a spouse, several times, and you can get that what's it called? I'll think of it in a minute. But it's where, the person helps them get over it. It's like an angelic thing. I tend to do that a lot in my life. I go to people that have hurt and I'm in their life until it's time for them to be on their own, or until it's time to let go at the proper time and let them feel what they need and I need, and then God works on it and brings it back. I just want to say hello to my little Kurt. He's a really old young man, retired from the DA's office. He's in a lot of law books. But when his wife died, his son, which is a sheriff, came to me and asked me to, be with his dad. And he's the uncle of my children. And I know it's the Florence Nightingale effect. I became his friend. I talked with him through everything. And the same with Michael. Michael lost his wife 3 years ago. I was there with him deeply, in every way, step, and form. And he's strong enough now to learn things on his own. We're in this split in our life where we're both doing what we need to do in order to do what we need to do for ourselves and learning lessons. But also, I want to talk a little bit about this fork in the road, choosing right or left. To me, I don't want to choose the fork in the road right or left. I'm going to keep going straight because that's what's working for me. There might not be a path there, but then again, that path needs to be made in order for me to learn. And if I follow Joe or Jack or Bill or Cindy or whoever, just because they went to the right road or to the left road, whatever, the fork in the road, then I am not in a purification of my straight and narrow and what I need for myself. I'm seeing what others are seeing. Yeah, the scenery along the way, but if I stay straight, I can't go wrong. The path to me is very narrow. I mean, I have nearly died a couple of times, that near-death experience. And each time I did not see no spiral. I didn't see any bright light. I didn't see any of that. I saw different things, but I didn't see that white light that some people see, because each time, once was in a car, for about an hour, and 3 different times I went to 3 different places because that's where I was in my process of my understanding my thoughts and my feelings at that time. And then other times have been when I had beta strep and, you know, surgeries that I've watched myself over myself. But I don't believe that I was literally dying because I was over myself, which watching what was happening to me, but I don't remember it much. My dad had the same thing happen. Now let's get back to wisdom, the gift of wisdom. That's the divine enablement to apply spiritual truth effectively to meet a need in a specific situation. People with this gift focus on unseen consequences in determining the next steps to take, receiving an understanding of what is necessary to meet the needs of the body and to provide a given situation in the midst of conflict and confusion. Here, the Spirit provides direction for God's best in a given situation and applying spiritual truth in a specific way and practice. So that's what wisdom means for that gift. Now you have the gift of teaching. That's the divine enablement to understand clearly and explain and apply the Word of God to the greater Christ-like in the lives of listeners. People with this gift communicate biblical truth that inspires greater obedience in the Word, challenging listeners to simply and practice with these truths of Scripture and present the whole counsel of God for maximum life and change, giving attention to detail and accuracy, and preparing through extended times of study and reflection. That's a pretty deep one. Woo. The truth. Teaching the truth to the listeners. You know, creative communication. The divine enablement to communicate God's truth through a variety of art forms. People with this gift use art to communicate with God's truth. So I do that. I draw these things. I don't even know what they are until later on down the road. It's something that happens in the world. Develop these artistic skills such as drama, writing, art, music, dance, etc., using a variety of creativity to captivate people and cause them to consider what Christ's message is and challenge the people's perspective of God in these various forms of art and demonstrate flesh ways to express the Lord's ministry and the messages. Now, I am speaking for me. I am a Christian, and that I will not falter. I do know and acknowledge that I know many different inside and outside and upside downs of all different types of things because I was told by my father to keep open and listen, but always keep the things that are like an enemy or whatever the closest to you by allowing you to know the insides and outs of what that person's motives and meanings are. That's what he taught me. And also, you know, you keep your friends if you're lucky to have two friends in your whole life, you know, at the end of your life, because everybody else is an associate. It's what you were doing at the given time in your life, and the group and the people that are there in the group that you feel are friends. You really feel they're going to be there for the nth degree. But when that particular situation and thing that y'all are doing together is no longer, you dwindle away. I promise. He was right. I couldn't believe him when he said that. I never thought I would ever understand that, but I do now. But I also know that's why I don't belong to groups or organizations, because I love everybody. And, you know, there's certain ones that come to me with wholehearted truth, but using discernment to know the difference. And I have to be realistic with that at all times. Maybe's online too. Whoop, whoop. I didn't realize that. Is she still there? Maidie? That's the godmother of my children. I'm sorry that I didn't connect to that line too quick enough. But anyway, Maidie called back and listened. I got out some of my journals. Now, and that's something else that I was like, oh my gosh, I hadn't seen some of these things since the early 90s and 80s. And, I was just running through them, you know. There's a lot to say, and I wrote down some of my dreams and stuff, but one of these, I wanted to, this one connected to me deeply because my daughter and I do this push-pull effect, and I do that with a lot of people. Not with people, just people, but even in my life, when I know that my body's changed and I can't push myself, to the extreme, but pushing beyond, this is 1995, 5, May the 19th, 1995, and 6/95 and 7/95 that I wrote about this. Pushing beyond limitations causes failure and weakness in my living. It will damage what it is that I am setting out for myself to do, placing doubt in my own mind. Pushing towards our limitations until achieved, it is a job well done. Then a goal can be set for a second set of limitations when it is ready for that activation. That goes back to me talking about, the weights and stuff and how we have to, set the goal and move on up with the weight sets that we tend to work out with. Oh, look at this, the second paragraph. A weightlifter can just expect to start lifting weights beyond his strength. That weight could not only damage the body, but the mental thoughts of its capacity also. To achieve this goal of the amount of weights, a weightlifter has to bear in mind that he must condition himself and exercise himself towards that goal. That's conditioning our minds with anything. We condition ourselves into resonating with what we see and feel and need in our lives to ascend and grow. In order to achieve these conditions, okay, towards the goal by starting with smaller weights and then gradually building himself the strength and the endurance until he has finally reached the limitations he has in his mind. Well, that's just like learning anything. I use this analogy. My history teacher taught me this, that when I'm going to sit down to learn something, take five definitions and five spellings of the definition and study them five times for 5 minutes each time. If I'm going to do four, then I can take four definitions, four understandings, and do it four times for 4 minutes. Our minds can only hold so much. We have to learn what our mind can hold and absorb and keep in order to gain that knowledge and understanding, because we're going to keep repeating the same thing over again until we learn the lesson. So remember, don't take off too much than you can bite. And if you're going to stick down and study books and stuff from other people, places, and things, use your discernment. And also remember to concentrate on four things for 4 minutes, four times, six things, 6 minutes for six times. It goes like that. Okay, and then this back to the pushing beyond limitations. It says, besides yourself, don't allow others to put expectations beyond your limitations. That's like so many people ask me, where's your YouTubes? Where's your books? Where's this? You know what? I don't need that for myself, because what I am speaking out is given out freely. And the little that I have put out there on the internet keeps getting taken down. So there's just no use for that. I don't need a book per se to have for anything but myself and my family. Because the other day I was so aggravated with the way people were acting and behaving in this world. And I've got papers that could probably fill 20 boxes and art out my yin yang and, just different things, drawings and photography. And I said, I should just burn every little thing I got, get it out of here, because my family is the only one that surely would really appreciate my things anyway. And I can speak that to them through a little mini tape recorder or whatever and use simplified things like that. I was so aggravated because I know my work is going to be studied when I pass on. I know it's studied now. I mean, it's obvious because I hear it everywhere I go. But the thing is that if we don't live it, if we don't become it and live it and absorb it and see it for ourselves, feel it for ourselves, we can take what others say and speak. But if we do not apply it in our lives, then how is it going to be any good? It can only be empty. It's just like I was telling my aunt and my mother and godmother at the beach this weekend. I said, you know how you start that little game in school where you whisper something in one person's ear and then they whisper what they heard in the next, and by the time it gets all back around, it isn't even anything that even matches what you started with. That's what with gossip and with spreading out other things, because things are beginning to get so weak and so watered down that the messages of truth are out. You have to weed through and use so much discernment on this internet, especially, that, you know, it's gotten to the point where, hey, what's the big deal? That's one reason I never study anybody's stuff. Or I listen to a lot of archives, but I don't study people's stuff, only because it's watered down. You know, it's taken out of context, and there's nowhere that I can check where this person got what they are speaking of. You know, like in the back of a book, the autobiography or the index. I don't see that in books today. But anyway, let me get back to this. Don't allow others to put expectations on your boundaries. Look inside yourself and know yourself. That's what that page says. And then it says on the back, it says the push and pull, up and down, the seesaw, the roller coaster, is a result of allowing self to be stimulated of a way that will throw me off balance. Easy does it because the balance is of the virtue. I have to separate who I am and who others think I am, because who I think and feel I am is what really is what is needed to know. Because if I'm doing things for other people, I'm not getting the gratification for the true authenticness that I need for myself. I don't need to prove anything to anybody. Just like Terry Lynn Whitaker, that great book that I read in school, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. I'm not saying not to listen to others' ideas and take what you want into consideration. However, to learn for yourself, you are the final decision maker. You have to start somewhere, and that's getting out of your head the old tapes and situations from the past. Now, how I did that is I would lay down. I didn't know anything about meditation. Nobody ever taught me, but I learned this back as a teen, maybe, or younger, when I'd ride Fair Lady, and I'd say, I know there's something out here, please, you know, and I'd lay down in the woods or whatever, and I'd just be really still, and I would think of a Roto-Rooter, of all things, like my brain had all these routes in it, and I would, because the more I think something, the more it makes a solid route, and it knows to go that way, like a map, you know, like how you learn your places in your car, how to get to places. You just learn it and know that that's the way. Well, that's how a thought does every time you think it. The more you ride on that path, the more you go on that way, then the more that route is going to be placed into the thought process. And those are your old tapes and old situations. So that's another reason I like to go straight, because that path is mine and mine only. You know, I can learn from other people by the side views and, you know, things along the way, and because everything has a symbol and symbolic meaning in it. But I have to be my own self. I have to follow myself, and I have to depend on myself and my inner higher self, which is God, who I choose to call Jesus Christ. If I have to, start somewhere, and that's getting out of my way. Okay. Become who you are and get to know who you are, what it is that you want out of this life, without any alterations, just like a seamstress, okay? That's like other people putting on my clothes that were perfectly tailored for me, speaking my words out there, which are great, but make sure that they fit, you know, that they've got the perfect whole message in anybody's work, because that's just what it's all about, is to resonate it to yourself, live it, and become it, you know? I want to say, becoming a shaman, as I worked that hard, I was sick for 7 years, and nearly every person that goes on this path is very violently sick for 7 years. There's things that people want to call themselves a shaman or say that they do, and, you know, say that they are, but, man, that's like saying a doctor's a doctor when, you know, they hadn't gone through the proper ways and means, because we have to get every living shadow, hurt, doubt, fear, whatever that we have gone through in our lifetime out in open, in public, in the public of yourself, and really look at it, dissect it to the nth degree. And that's what I've been doing. People like to call it the dark night of the soul. I don't like that, because I don't see it as a dark night of the soul. I see it as a hospital, as a healing, as an understanding, as pulling out the splinter that has been so infested for so many years, you know, because a splinter can crack and break inside the skin. Okay. This is an example. And it'll fester up just a little piece at a time. And I have one master physician, which is God, which is miracles. Now, I want also touch base on this copperhead thing. To me, a copperhead was the copperhead Indian penny. It was the first penny, 1 cent that any money was. It was the copper, the copper-headed penny, the head of a Native American. That's where that comes from. Okay, let's get that cleared up a little bit here. Now we're also going to come to a little bit more of what I wrote. It says, "Become who you are without any." Okay. If it fits, you wear it. Don't borrow others' clothing and who they want you to be and how you should act. That'll only go deep inside into yourself and cause resentments. But it says being deep inside is where the answers have always been. And you really know your true self and what it is that you need. It's what you want. Now, I like to. A lot of people want to be like somebody else, or that's their idol or whatever. Great. But if you're going to get a spiritual message out there, if you're going to put out there what you feel, think, and see, and know, use your inner self as a meditation. Know what you are listening for your higher self and the higher good for all people, not for popularity contests, not for look at me, because they will look for you inside out. And when you make a little mistake, they're going to blow your ass out of the water. But anyway, to thine own self be true, not to thine own others be true, but conditions of self, and set your own goals and limitations in your actions, because your actions do speak louder than the words, because like sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me. And it says, it came to pass, not it came to be. I like that. Now, that's pretty good stuff. I am enjoying going through things. Okay, this one's March the 14th, 1995. Now I'm reading these old things because I haven't read them in so long. I don't know where they were, but they just happened to be somewhere when I looked, and there they were. This is a how did I know if something keeps, how do I know if something keeps surfacing? If it's something that the negative is doing, or what I'm doing, or is it something that God wants me to see and to work on? What about that one? Then I have pray. That's March the 14th, 1995. Okay? That's what this date is. It says, allow God to bring out what it is that I need to see and work on, etc. Ooh, this is going to be a pinpointer for me. I always get a message out of my things. Let's see. Don't focus on things. Just do it if it, like studying the house, kids, etc. If something comes to mind, see it for what it is, acknowledge it, but don't analyze it. Don't try to go back in time with it. This is my journal, so I'm speaking to myself, okay? No matter what I need to follow, a structured list and priorities of time and consistency. If I am working on an like insurance, it says medical. Stay on it till it's complete, no matter what else comes along, because I tend to come across other things in the process. And just like when a person's cleaning their house and they go to the back, laundry room to get something. They start in the laundry room. They forget they got the water running, and they start going all over the house. This is basically teaching me to stay on track with what I'm doing because it's important. Like even with a book deadline or whatever. And it says if something is important, do it, and jot it down if it's something that comes to mind. But let your subconscious know that you acknowledge it and what it needs to be for later. Stick to what I'm doing, and then. How will I stay focused and less confused and stressed? Just to see the results that I have, more time to complete other things. Then it says, for now, quit looking for answers in my past. Just follow today and where I am today. No more what ifs, because they are trouble to me. What if I did this and I felt this? And it says in the past, it says, when I was a child, I used to think how I could correct things, and now I need to focus on how I feel about things and how I can follow through things and learn from them, because then the rest will follow. Then I have my timelines, which people tend to not understand those, which I said it's very important to make timelines. Somebody said, like with a remote viewing, I believe, they said that if you can't really destinate on a timeline with that. Well, to me, the timeline is when the destination was placed. That's timeline number one, and timeline number, you know, the rest of the timeline comes when it was accomplished. Timelines are always, they, you can't play with time. I mean, they're just there. See, I don't have clocks or anything that, calendars or anything in my life. I go by my instinctual self to get up in the mornings or down, you know, when I'm trying to sleep. But I also, you know, I will keep my appointments. Now I have them written down, but this is March 10th, which is 1995. And I have like Friday, and then I have Saturday, and then I have Sunday and Monday, the 13th, 14th. But what I do is I keep a timeline since back in the day. And that doesn't matter to tell the whole story about it, but I can put descriptive adjectives of what went on that particular day. And that keeps my timeline. That's one thing about timelines. Now, I'm opening my journal to anywhere it opens to, okay? So that's page two, so let me look back at what it's talking about. This is September 6, 2002. I had just read a book called us, it was by Susan Hayward, and I put it in my own words after what I learned from the book. Okay, this is what I learned from the book. This was back when I was just coming out of school and right when I was dealing with my hip replacement. Insight in times of indecision and crisis, of the sadness, joy, and happiness that set me back in despair. This is how I go with reading someone's book and not taking it, but reading it and then talking to myself about what did I get out of it. That's a perfectly healthy way to take somebody's work, mine, anybody's, resonate it, and then apply it to my life. So I applied this. I said, these are my words. The book of the insight in times of indecision and crisis. Nothing is by chance. Life is a journey that I must face my challenges, like going into the forest, a million-mile journey. I need to focus on the perspective of its patterns God has planned for me and the goals and the options that I have by choosing my choices, because I always have choices to choose. When chosen, that's something that hasn't worked. Why? Like manipulation, other people's manipulation. I learned that maybe I was manipulated. I had to see that that was a learned behavior, and it was to control others, to take their power into getting my control. So I had to learn to see that defect character in myself, to get that splinter out and to understand what I was doing without realizing I was doing it. And I had to unlearn that behavior. So I am thankful for the input that I take into consideration. You know, my dad taught me that in order to stop a conflict with people, he'd say, I hear what you're saying, and I'll take that into consideration. We don't have to go any further. It'll stop an argument or a conflict or confrontation right away, he said. And it says, in order for me to take my power back, I have to get back into control of myself and realize with discernment what manipulations are. Be thankful for my input. Be thankful for what I give to myself, because I'll never know unless I have really taken care and looked at it, like my marriage, new car, movie, etc., whatever. It says, create my own reality to give the opportunity for growth. And that's something new. Okay. The mind is there to help me to solve problems, and that's why it keeps working in my subconscious and it never stops. Boy, I was on the subconscious thing, wasn't I? Think of something, and even though I think I've dismissed it, my subconscious continues to keep pulling on it up in all kinds of ways to help me look for and understand it through pleasures, pains, twisting it into a reality that I need to avoid the guilt, to make excuses for myself or for others by accepting its reasons. If I dismiss it when my mind brings it up, it will continue until I solve it. So I have to use the tool that I have gotten, and that is to write about it and to express that I acknowledge it. And to get back into control of my own mind, because our mind is there to please us. Best book I ever read in school, another one, is I forget the name of it, but it's Getting Back into Control of Your Mind. Because our mind is there to please us. And it goes on to say that the control of the mind, choose to think what thought. And I already said all that. Isn't that weird? I'm just opening this darn journal at random in the middle of it, and it's coming to the stuff that I started with on this broadcast before I even started in my journals. That is so God. Okay, let's see. Listen and write about things that are being brought up, whether it's, something painful or whatever, because if we dismiss it, it's going to come around in another way. How do I understand my questions with your guidance? I have to guide them and understand them, not ask more, because if I keep asking questions, I get the answers, but more questions will follow because only God knows all the answers. But if I seek that understanding in a quiet moment and look objectively at it in myself and how it resonates with me, why I have created this, what it means, and what the experience is in the terms of my growth. Look at all those aspects, what it means, look at the what, when, where, how, and there's your why every time. Because the lessons are there for us for life and growth. And it says the answers are within. God's always there speaking to us in a quiet place. But the thing is we've got just like, I want to express something that I learned as a kid, never understood this, but I was to pray in the quietest, secluded closet of my insides. I didn't understand that, but now I do, because we are wanting light. Everybody's wanting light and ascension in this world, right? And to dismiss the darkness. Let me tell you something that I have learned for myself. My darkness are my shadows. Nobody else places the darkness upon me unless I allow it. They don't have the power to cause me to feel, think, or do anything unless I allow it. That may become a shadow that I maybe need to work on. So if you go into a closet, right, and you have a candle, which is a light, that candle light will extinguish pretty quickly if the door, in the closet closed, because it has no oxygen. Darkness has no oxygen and no breath. God breathed into us. He gave us the breath of life. Light, pure, real light is always. And to me, the negative will punch and poke at the light. You cannot take the light to the darkness. It because then you close the door in the darkness, the oxygen will take the light out. But the light has to come from the darkness coming to the light. To me, the darkness is our lessons. It's our shadows inside of ourselves, not what the group thinks, not what other people, places, and things think. Now, how is it working in my life? And if I look at it that way, then I can find my light every time, because I go within myself and I go into the depths part. People can say mind control all they want, from commercials to telling people what they think, through messages on the internet. It doesn't matter. Conversations, all of that's mind control if you allow it. But you take what I take what I need. I might apply it. I might put it up on a bookshelf, an imaginary book, and it'd be there for later, or I'll just dispose of it. Keeping my side of the self, my side clean, my side of the street, my path clean, being me, an individual, but allowing others to be a part of me, and to join along in the path, but be in my own path, to my own self, to be true, to always follow myself. Hey, look, it's 2 minutes till I need to go now. It's been a great lesson for me. I can't wait to learn what I've said to myself without taking any shortcuts, but being who I am in my authentic self so that I can get to where I want on the other side in this ascension, when, because I can't depend on anybody. They could stumble and fall. If I'm following their way and what they are, just to be in the group and have the little, attagirl and, be popular, then that is not being real to me, because everybody has to be real to themselves. To thy own self be true. Remember, this is like bridging wisdom. We have wisdom spokes. We have the truth wheel. Speak the truth, know the truth, hear the truth, do the truth, be the truth, walk the truth, talk the truth. Earth wisdom. It goes around in a circle of spokes. So this is wisdom spokes. We have one wisdom spoke at a time. This is Kathy Cook, Bright Lights Pathfinders, Bridging Wisdom, one wisdom spoke at a time, on October 9th, 2012. Thank you, BBS Radio, for hosting me. And thank you all, active listening audience and archive. Take care and have a great week. Bye-bye. I love you.